Packer fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by the esteemed Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. Guys, welcome back into the podcast room. This is the first time we've been here in a few days. Feels like it's been weeks, but it was a long stretch to get here.
Yeah, I wish it would have been weeks. I could use the break. Ryan was asking me if I was happy to see him again, and I told him no.
You didn't think of me at all.
Nope.
Not one thought of the bye week.
Anybody during the bye week
except myself. I was wondering about you, Spoon. I was wondering how you're doing, how was life, and it was very one-sided.
Didn't think about us at all.
For either of you, but I didn't think of you once, so...
I would be offended, but I can't blame you. I would want to turn my mind off too if I could. But yes, we are back after a much needed late season bye week. Needed all around. Needed for us. Needed for the Packers. Guys, just let's look at it big picture here. Heading into the final five games of the regular season, sitting at 9-3, second place in the NFC, but with a tiebreaker over the Arizona Cardinals, if it comes to that. Spoon, I'm going to start with you. Is this a good place to be for this team after the bye week, or where are they at right now?
Yeah, I don't think it could be much better. I think when you can survive a late bye, you know, you can get to it and be 9-3 and then have a week off with a month to go in the season. I think that's really where you want to be. I know New England is another team who has its bye this week, and they're on a roll, and that's just exactly the place you want to be. No other team is getting that kind of break, or very few other teams are getting that kind of break. And if you do win home field advantage, perchance you're going to get 2 weeks off in less than 2 months. So yeah, I think they're right where they want to be.
Packers and Patriots, both with late buys. And like you said, getting to this point, they've earned it. Let's really get ahead of ourselves here for a second. Let's just have fun and for kicks and giggles, get ahead of ourselves. Could that be your Super Bowl matchup?
Could be. I think the AFC is so wide open. It's kind of fascinating. It's hard to know what to make of up and down and left and right in that conference, because you could name a lot of different teams as the best team. New England's hot right now, and they've got that late season bye. But Bills are my preseason pick, and they've been
struggling. Golly, you're sticking to it.
They've got the talent for it. They've been struggling, but they've got the talent for it. I don't think that would shock anyone if they made a run. Right. You've got the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. At some point he might wake up and be Patrick Mahomes again. That wouldn't surprise anyone. And then from the Packers standpoint, you know, to the point that Spoon was making, not only did they get to 9-3 with that late season bye, but think of how many things went wrong. So many things that could have torpedoed this season before they ever got to that bye. Elton Jenkins being in and out of the lineup before eventually being out. The fact they haven't had David Bakhtiari. They've barely had Jair Alexander. They basically haven't had Za'Darius Smith. Any one of those injuries could have been a sidetrack type injury when you don't have any time to regroup. So if they get healthier at 9-3, lining up for these last five games, I think the Packers are in a really good position. And obviously New England's the hot team in the AFC. So I think it absolutely could be.
And yeah, Ryan, or go ahead.
I think it also could be a Tom Brady versus Patriots Super Bowl. I wouldn't rule that out. The Buccaneers are 9-3 as well as the Packers. And it's really going to be attrition again. Who can get hot? Who can stay healthy? And, you know, I sort of want to, maybe you want to address this, or you were going to go to the health of the team. I'll just wait till we get into that part, but that'll be a big determining factor.
You know what, Cassidy, one thing that, you know, to your question, could it be Patriots versus Packers? That's the Super Bowl that everyone listening to this podcast wanted in 2014. So it'd be interesting if that was the case. Yeah. That's the Super Bowl everyone, and they were 5 minutes from that Super Bowl. in 2014. That looked like it'd be the matchup.
Yeah, well, I've been there, done that, done Packers Patriots. You guys can handle that.
Yeah, you go way back to the 90s. You go back to when I don't know who was the Pearl Jam was hot back then, right?
I believe James Brown was the halftime guest.
Wow.
Yeah, 90s Super Bowl, yeah.
He's over that, just like he's over us, Ryan. Well, as Spoon kind of alluded to, we are going to get into a little bit of an injury report here. There have now been, at the time of this recording, 2 days in a row that we have seen Jair Alexander back out at practice with a helmet on. We apparently made too big of a deal about him not being in a helmet on Wednesday. I thought it seemed significant. I know y'all did too, but Matt LaFleur said on Thursday that had more to do with a mechanical issue. It had just been a while since he had had it on. But I thought that in and of itself was indicative of him getting back into the swing of things. If there were mechanical issues with the helmet because he hadn't had it on in so long, then having it back today and ready to go was yet another step forward, albeit a small one, but another step forward. As we look to this Bears game, is that way, way too early to assume Alexander could be back on the field? He's now in that 3-week window in which he can be put on the 53-man roster. I guess what I'm asking is, and Ryan, I'll start with you. If you were a betting man, when's the earliest that you would think we'd see Alexander back on the field?
I think the absolute earliest would be next week. No way this week. I joked earlier this week on Twitter about, hey, if the Packers are really, really lucky, maybe they'll have Jair Alexander back for Justin Fields. The joke being that they don't need Jair Alexander for Justin Fields. So
there were levels, I would say, to that joke.
I know, I'm hilarious. I would say the very earliest Baltimore. Would not surprise me if he got a week later than that. You know, Mike Smith was talking about Za'Darius Smith, but it might as well be the same for Jair Alexander when he said the important thing is think big picture and be smart in that when you are back, you're back for good. And So being cautious, being deliberate, and making sure that these guys get back for the stretch run, It's better to be too late than too early, because they need Jair Alexander for January, not so much December.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Spoon, I know you had some opinions on Aaron Jones being brought back when he was. Do you kind of feel the same way about Jair Alexander? Better to hold him out for as long as possible?
So my feeling, and just basically from what I've been told about Jair Alexander, is they want to keep ramping up his rehabilitation and find out whether his shoulder can hold on to practicing this much. So I don't think he comes back. I think the plan would be maybe they try to get him in to one game. If they don't shut him down after 3 weeks, then maybe they play him in the Lions game, and that way he's ready for the playoffs. I think the same would be for Za'Darius Smith. But I guess listening to Mike Smith a little bit and starting to think about how we're really just 5 games away from the playoffs, that I'm not sure that these guys can be ready. I don't know if we're going to see them at all this year. I'm starting to have my doubts about whether either one will be back. Bakhtiari, I think, will be back for sure. But I'm really skeptical. And one of the reasons with Jair Alexander is that this guy is he's their future on defense, and I know they're not going to mess around if there's any reason or any risk involved. So I've kind of changed my opinion on that.
You're not allowed to change your opinion. Let me ask you this. Would Jair Alexander, just to confirm, since he was taken off of IR and back at practice and he has that 3-week window, he would have to be put back on the 53-man roster within that 3-week window, or they shut him down for the season. It's one or the other, correct?
So yes.
He'd have to be back by the Browns game?
The 3 weeks ends the week of the Detroit game. So it would be from after the Bears. No, I take that back. Yes, I'm wrong. It would be after the Browns
game. Yeah.
So they could play him in that Vikings game if they feel he's ready, or they could just wait till the Detroit game if they deem him ready to come back.
Yeah.
I know it has a lot to do with his pain tolerance and a bunch of other things, range of motion. So
could you finagle it to where you put him on the 53 and then just not play him?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. They did that with Bakhtiari, you know, after the 3-week window. So yeah, you put him on the 53 and shoot, maybe you carry him through the playoffs if you think he can help you. Mm-hmm. But you know, he's got to get into football shape, and that's got to take at least 3 weeks, you know.
I know with that we have all talked about this at different times and separately, so let's talk about it all together and get everyone's opinion at the same time. Would you always need corners? That's just one of those positions that you stock up on when you can. And Jair Alexander is an elite corner. But is this secondary seriously hurting without him?
Well, I think kind of an interesting way to look at it is of the three that all pros that they need, that they might have coming back, which is the most important to return? And I would not say it's Jair Alexander. I would say it's David Bakhtiari. I don't know if there's differing opinions here, but I would say it's David Bakhtiari. Especially, it's only amplified by the fact that Elgton Jenkins is not walking through that door again for 2021. So because of that, that left side, it's held up, but what to Spoon's point, Tampa Bay's out there. What about when January comes and you're only going against the best defensive fronts? Mm-hmm. I think that you need, if of the three, if you're a Packers fan and you can only have one of those three all pros back, I would say it's David Bakhtiari.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I was thinking it through while you were talking, and I'm like, okay, well, how good would Jair Alexander be if you threw him out there with just a couple weeks of practice or even a week of practice? Is he one of those guys who can just roll out of bed and be
and shut down wide receiver ones?
One side of me says yes, that's just how gifted he is. The other side of me says, but it's cornerback. And I mean, he hasn't been facing receivers just, you know, all season long. So I'm going to go with Bakhtiari, but Alexander's a close second, because if you all of a sudden have a guy like Alexander back, and even if he's like 90%, 80%, boy, is your secondary a lot better. And you can use Stokes and Douglas in specific matchups. Things like
that. I wonder how much the fact that it's a shoulder for Jair Alexander helps him, because he can run around, right? From a conditioning standpoint, like, it's not a lower body. It's not a knee where you just can't do anything. Like,
right.
In theory, Jair Alexander can run.
But can he get up in the line and jam a guy? Can he tackle? I mean, to me, that's how he got hurt.
Well, I guess when you mean football shape, though, from a conditioning standpoint, that should help tremendously. It's just the power of that shoulder.
Yeah, I don't think football when I talk about football shape, I'm talking about doing all the cutting, you know, being able to do hand fighting with a guy, you know, with the receiver, being mm-hmm. able to body him up, being able to jam him at the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. It's all that kind of stuff that is football stuff that you can't replicate, you know, in the Don Hutson Center with a bag. You know what I mean? So I'm going to say Bakhtiari. I am going to stick with that.
I would agree. You know, y'all's opinions would probably hold a little more weight here, but yes, I would agree. Bakhtiari is, if you had to pick one of the three, who you would want the most. Obviously you don't turn your nose up at Jair Alexander, but the secondary hasn't necessarily hurt without him. In my opinion, could he make it better? Sure. But it hasn't taken a nosedive without him out there. Russell Douglas has been a very nice surprise. So I think that you could stand up a little bit more. You could stand to go without him. You can't go into the playoffs with the left side of that line still in question, especially if you're going to depend so much of your game on the running game. And like Ryan said, going against front sevens that are built to rush. That's who you need back.
The team you have to match up with is Tampa Bay. That's the team you have to.
Or avoid them. Yeah. Or avoid them.
And I don't think you can avoid them. I think if the Packers are going to get to the Super Bowl, they're going to have to go through Tampa.
Yeah.
And yes, you have to block them first. You would love to have Jair Alexander to cover Antonio Brown or Chris Godwin, you know, and you put or whatever. You have to put someone on Mike Evans. But more than anything, you got to block those guys.
I think that we should probably make the point of, I think we're in consensus here that of the three, Za'Darius Smith would be third, right? And I think we should probably make the point. I mean, as far as I see it, at least, it's not that edge rusher is unimportant. It's one of the most important positions in the game. Right. It's not that Za'Darius Smith is untalented. Za'Darius Smith is a very talented guy. And if they got him back, that would be absolutely huge for this defensive front. To me, I think the rise of Rashawn Gary has really mitigated the loss of Za'Darius Smith. It hasn't made up for it, but they have a constant presence off that edge that when he went out week one, had the surgery week two, we didn't know if they were going to have that constant presence. We didn't know at that point that Rashawn Gary was going to take a leap in year three. So I think that, you know, David Bakhtiari doesn't have Elgton Jenkins next to him. Jair Alexander has some depth at corner, but not a locks. I mean, your number two is a rookie. Rashawn Gary being the guy next to Za'Darius Smith, his omission from the field, I think that has a big reason for me why I'd put him number three.
But the thing with Za'Darius Smith, okay, so I'll give you the pros and the cons. The cons is that he had a back injury. And he had back surgery. And, man, it's hard to come back from back surgery. I don't know how you get your flexibility, all that back after having not played football. Mike Smith even said, geez, he never even learned the system because he really didn't practice during
training. Great point. That's a great point.
You know, so that's one thing. But then on the other, I think to the New Orleans game where he was hurting – and they threw him in there for 18 snaps. Remember the hit he had on Jameis Winston? I mean, just like that, he got through and blasted the guy. So could Za'Darius Smith, you know, if Za'Darius Smith came in and was able to do that, then you don't need Jair Alexander quite as much. So, you know, there's all these pros and cons, and there's a lot of stuff we don't know in terms of how their health is. But I'm going to stick with Bakhtiari because one, he's the closest to playing, I think. And I still agree with you that the loss of Elgton Jenkins means you really got to replace him.
Yeah. Jair Alexander, as talented as he is, isn't going to be out there blocking Vita Vea. So let's talk about someone that they lost. Well, it's not confirmed for sure that they lost, but we're pretty sure that's where it's heading. Randall Cobb. I'm going to let Spoon jump in here because I know you've kind of been on top of it and wrote the story that listeners can find on PackersNews.com. But where do the Packers currently stand with Randall Cobb and his core muscle injury?
Yeah, so, you know, as I suspected and tweeted that it's more than likely that core muscle injury that Alan Lazard had last year and would require surgery. And ESPN reported that he would need or he did have surgery last week. Every single guy that I've covered who's had it, Demarius Randall had it, Geronimo Allison had it, Alan Lazard had it, Quentin Rollins had it. It takes almost 2 months to come back. Well, Lazard was 6 weeks, but that included a bye week. I don't think Randall Cobb's coming back. I think they've lost him for the year. And, you know, I wrote on Tuesday that's the risk of, and I think we talked about it on here.
All over it.
That's the risk of signing an older guy is that he's going to have some kind of muscle, soft tissue injury. And then you've not worked Amari Rodgers all year. And now he's, you know, are you counting on him? No, they're not going to play him all that much. They'll play him a little bit.
So if Amari Rodgers is not going to be there to step in, Ryan, I'll throw this to you. Who do you turn to take Cobb's snaps?
Well, Equanimeous St. Brown gets elevated to that receiver 4 position. I'll say, you know, Spoon was all over this. I think it was a couple weeks ago that we were debating on the podcast, and Spoon's point was, you know, again, that you don't develop someone, and my point was kind of, well, it's good that he's been here for 12 games because he has made a production. But when you look at it in the very real possibility that he's out for the season, they're at 9-3, even with Randall Cobb, even without Randall Cobb, excuse me. If they don't have Randall Cobb this entire 12 game period, they are still at 9-3.
That's an interesting question. You think they win the Rams game without him?
I think they win the Rams game and the Steelers game. I think they win the Steelers game as well. He obviously went off and had 3 touchdowns. That I think they find other guys to go in the end zone. I'm not saying he did not make this team better, but I think they're still 9-3 without Randall Cobb. And so if you're still 9-3 without Randall Cobb, and I'm conceding the point, Spoon, if you're still 9-3 without Randall Cobb, that time would have been better served developing someone, because now – Cassidy, to your question, who steps up? Equanimee St. Brown. But boy, it would have been nice to have Amari Rodgers ready to go for December. I'm not saying that he would have been if Randall Cobb was never here, but it had an effect on development. So that's not going to be the case. Amari Rodgers, the punt return, he's got his hands full with that, unless he slips and doesn't have his hands full with that. I mean, he's his eyebrows with punt return. It's going to be Equanimee St. Brown stepping up into that role. And it's a minor role. I mean, Alan Lazard's still your number 3, and MVS is your number 2, and Davante Adams is Davante Adams. But still, I mean, it's going to be EQ that steps up in that.
But just to throw this in, if I'm LaFleur and I get ahead in this game, I play in Amari Rodgers a ton, and yep. I'm getting him the ball and just build some confidence. Actually, you know, the last time he played and did something, I think was the Bears game. They just swung a pass out to him. Do you remember that? And he broke a tackle and almost, you know, was just like one slip from having a nice long gain. Now, maybe he doesn't run his assignments right. I don't know. We don't know that. But I would like to see LaFleur at least try him. You know, so we can, all of us can see what this guy has, if he has anything.
Just for our benefit, Matt LaFleur.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I don't care about the game. I want to see you.
Yeah. But I mean, that's a decent scenario, Spoon. You know, if they get up 3 scores, do you send him out there and put him on a drive and just let Aaron Rodgers dink and dunk it downfield to sort of get some yards under his belt, get his confidence up?
The way he's built now, you know, I think ultimately he's going to have to lose weight and to be a little quicker. But now that it's December and you know, it's going to be a little tighter quarters and cold, I wonder if he's maybe built for that a little bit more, where they can swing the ball out to him and he can be kind of like a running back.
I'm just glad that you reminded me there's a game this week.
Were you not sure otherwise?
Well, it's easy to forget, all things considered.
Yeah, it's sad that the NFL has to put a product like this out there. It's not going to be very good.
You know what? You know what is sad, unfortunate? It's too bad that the Bears suck. I mean, it really is. It'd be better for this rivalry. It'd be better for the league if the Bears were actually worth anything. It's unfortunate that the Bears are not better than they are, because, you know, not to transition into this game, but it should absolutely be a bloodbath. It should not be close. And, you know, Packers, Bears, early December at Lambeau Field, you want a classic matchup. You want a competitive contest. And the Bears just, they don't got it. So, yeah, it's stunning that we've gone this far, rightly so, in this podcast without even, you know, mentioning that hey, by the way, it's Bears week.
Let's talk about the Bears then. Hey guys, it's Bears week. You talked about it's a shame that the NFL has to field this product. You know, remember the Bears played the Lions on Thanksgiving Day. There was some confusion with the coin toss. I'm not sure if y'all even watched the game.
And a lot of plays after that, there was also confusion.
But there was confusion with the coin toss. And a friend of mine tweeted the video and he was like, "We get it. We don't want to watch either one of your offenses either." And so, you know, nobody really kind of wanted to see that. That being said, Aaron Rodgers talked about the rivalry this week. And he was defending his comments, his I own you, I still own you comments. I don't think anyone was actually offended by that unless you're a Bears fan. But he was saying, you know, he knows it could be used against him, but, and I'm paraphrasing him here, he said, I don't think you can really find much to disagree with what I said. He's 21-5, I believe, 22-5, something like that, against the Bears in his career. He talked about watching Brett Favre sort of get the rivalry back on the right side against the Bears, and then he's carried it on. So over the past 30 years, these two guys have really swung this rivalry back in the Packers' direction. I believe of the last 20, I'm trying to remember the stat, that they've won the last 20 of 22 games or something like that. It's incredibly skewed. I guess if you're a Packers fan, you love it. But as a football fan, like you said, you want a classic matchup between these, the most played, oldest rivalry in the NFL. Is there any chance, Spoon, I'll start with you, is there any chance Chicago comes in here on Sunday and makes it a game?
Well, the number, by the way, is 20 of 23. They've won 20 of the last 23 meetings.
20 of 22, 20 of 23. I was close.
Yeah, you were. And so
close only counts in hand grenades and horseshoes, though, right?
Yes. What the Packers have probably need to worry about the most, since, you know, Matt Nagy may be on his last legs here with the Bears. I'm going to hearken back to history again, because I'm old. But, you know, when the Forrest Gregg, Mike Ditka era came, Forrest Gregg showed his players the day before a bunch of, like, cheap, what he viewed were cheap shots and things that the Bears had done to fire his guys up. And they came out and they just cheap shot the crap out of the Bears, including Charles Martin throwing and basically ending Jim McMahon's career by picking him up and throwing him on the ground after an interception. And so, you know,
that's how petty I like my rivalries.
Rodgers better hope that, you know, Nagy doesn't do something like that and the Bears come out and just take all kinds of late hits and things like that. I don't think that's the kind of team they are, but, you know, that's where it could really backfire.
You've got to have some passion to play like that. And no offense to the Chicago Bears, but they've seemed to be a very no passion. There we go. It's a good thing I don't have to use words for a living, right? They seem to have played with very, very little passion all season. So, I mean, Ryan, let me hear your opinion on this. Do they have any bit of fire left in their belly to come in and make this a game? Because they could be very well playing for Matt Nagy's job. Do they even care about their coach enough to think of that?
Well, I think you're about to find out. You know what helps in getting to Aaron Rodgers for a cheap shot would be like having Khalil Mack. So they don't have that either. That would be very helpful for them.
Just in case anyone didn't know, he is out for the season after foot surgery. Sorry, go ahead.
So I think that you're about to find out, you know, at the end of Mike McCarthy's tenure, it is very apparent that it was time. I mean, that loss that they had at Lambeau Field early December 2018 to Arizona, it was just clear. It was abundantly obvious that the tenure had ended, and then it ended. And, you know, I think Mark Murphy did the merciful and the right thing. And okay, it's done. Like put it out of the misery and let him move on. Let's move on. For Matt Nagy, I think this is the type of game. If you're the Bears and you, what we're talking college football, rivalry games, right? Throw out the records. It doesn't matter. It's about the rivalry. Well, if you're the Bears and you're going nowhere fast and you have a rivalry game in this game at Lambeau Field, and you can't get up for this game, then yeah, the tenure's ended. This could be the type of game from Chicago standpoint that makes it abundantly obvious that it is time to move on and maybe not even wait for the end of the season.
Yeah, the Bears are probably just hoping this doesn't turn out like the game, I can't remember what year it was, but Mark Trestman was the coach, and the Packers scored like 42 points in the first half, and it was just embarrassment. And, you know, I think Trestman was gone at the end of that year, if I recall.
He should have been gone at the end of the game.
Yeah. And so I don't know if it'll be like that. Maybe they do rally for Nagy, but, you know, I think the real thing that could inspire them is Justin Fields. I think that's the one thing that could get them fired up, is if he starts hitting, you know, and moving the team and just showing them exactly what he was supposed to be when they drafted him, then that's the kind of thing that could really lift them up.
Give them some belief.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say that's probably the number one thing.
Sunday should be sunny, but it's going to be cold. There's a cold front that's coming through this weekend, so it could still be windy. It might have to go to the ground a little bit more, and that's where Justin Fields can shine. I argued this earlier with Ryan on a Facebook Live that I think the biggest thing that's been holding back Justin Fields is Matt Nagy. There was a game where Matt Nagy had to stay at home. He was in quarantine, and it was the best game of Justin Fields' young career yet. Yeah. So, you know, if Matt Nagy knows this is the end and he's just got to throw out everything with the kitchen sink and see what happens, then maybe we do see a little bit more from Justin Fields. Maybe he's allowed to just sort of play his game. But with that being said, let's get into some matchups. Even without Za'Darius Smith, Devondre Campbell should be back this weekend, according to Matt LaFleur. He said he'll be back in the building either Friday or Saturday, and that if he's cleared from the COVID-19 protocols, he will, to quote Matt LaFleur, absolutely play on Sunday. Is Justin Fields enough? Because he would almost be this offense by himself. I mean, they do have Montgomery at running back. Is Justin Fields enough to take on this front seven? Ryan, I'll start with you.
You know, it depends on how disciplined the Packers pass rush is, because I think that Justin Fields being a rookie has a lot to do with the difficulty of reading through progressions and adjusting to the speed of this game from a passing standpoint. But we know that he's got wheels. Mm-hmm. And so if the Packers get out of their rush lanes and they are undisciplined in pressuring him, that's the quickest way for them to get burnt this week. And they can't, that's the one thing they cannot do, is allow Justin Fields to beat them with their legs. You know, it's very much like Tremont Williams said about Mitch Trubisky. They got to make Justin Fields play quarterback and not let him win with the legs. So if they're undisciplined, then sure, Justin Fields can be, I mean, he's a very super talented athletic guy. He very well might develop into a really, he's got the talent to be a very good quarterback in this league. You hate, if you're the Packers, you'd hate for this to be the week that he starts to get it. So I think it really is incumbent on them to be disciplined in their pass rush.
He throws a beautiful ball. We talk a lot about his legs, but he does throw a beautiful ball. But Spoon, same question to you. He's been out for a couple of weeks with a rib injury, so this will be his first game back in a couple of weeks. Is it still going to be too much? Is the Packers' speed on defense too much for him to really have a chance if he's going to take this on himself on Sunday?
No. And he's not completely taking it on himself. I think what I like about him is that he does have the legs to run, but he's looking to pass. Mm-hmm. And he did throw some really nice passes in the game they played. There were all kinds of factors, you know, they couldn't block the Packers very much, very well. And, you know, it just wasn't a good day all around for the Bears. But who knows, maybe he just gets hot. Maybe they have a really nice game plan against Joe Barry's defense. Maybe the Packers are cocky, or maybe they do get out of their rush lanes and he can step up and make some plays. All those things could happen. I think really the best thing for the Packers to do is get up early and you know, make Fields have to throw every single down.
Crush their spirit, crush their soul, right?
Yeah.
Leave no prisoners.
Just like Spoon does with us.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm just kidding. We love you.
No, I'm not kidding. You crush my soul all the time. Didn't even think about me on the bye week, Spoon.
I'm not going to lie.
Okay, boys, settle down. Let's flip to the other side of the ball. Aaron Jones looks, from what we've seen at practice, to be full go, ready to go. He was cutting again. If you have a fully, what's the word I'm looking for? I want to say charged, but I know that's not the right word. Fully healthy 1-2 punch with Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. How much of an advantage can that be, especially against this Bears defense?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say what they really need is to highlight Aaron Jones. I know Dillon's been solid, but when they've been their best, Aaron Jones has driven the offense. He's been the guy that, you know, makes big plays, gets a big run, gets the defense on its heels, causes the defense to do things that they don't want to do, which is sometimes come up and play single high safety because he can be dangerous. I think they got to get him back to where he was. Dillon is a nice compliment, but Aaron Jones is the guy you got to ride. And I think he's proven that when he is at his best, the Packers offense is at its best.
So you don't buy the whole December game at Lambeau Field, black and blue division, ride the big power back.
I don't. No. I mean, I do think that in the red zone that AJ Dillon can be pretty good. And I think there will be opportunities, but man, they need the home run ball. That's what's been missing from their offense. And Aaron Jones, that's what he does, but he needs more carries to do it. You know?
Don't think that maybe you could split their reps almost evenly? And that's why I called it a 1-2 punch, because I feel like they're complementary.
I wouldn't. I would give Aaron Jones the most reps. Now, that doesn't mean I wouldn't give AJ Dillon some series, and if he's, you know, getting eight yards, but Aaron Jones has the capability to get 10 yards, 12 yards, you know, and then it becomes 20 yards and 40 yards. And I think I just believe that since Matt LaFleur has been here, and McCarthy never used Aaron Jones the right way. Since Matt LaFleur got here, Aaron Jones has really driven the offense. And so I think they kind of need to get back to that.
Okay. I want to tell you you're wrong, but you've been right about literally everything we've disagreed on.
Now you're wrong right there.
Isn't this the kind of week where you don't want to overexert anybody?
But you can't roll your helmet out there either.
No, but to your point, Cassidy, I think this is the type of week where maybe you do split the reps, just because I don't know if you want to overexert every. There's five games left, and this should be one of the easiest games left on your schedule. Let's call it what it is.
Well, it depends. So if it's a blowout, of course, I still, you know, in the first half, I would focus more on Aaron Jones.
What if we say Jones gets 18 to 20 and Dillon gets 12 to 15? That's a lot of running plays.
I don't know. I said don't overexert. I'm very good at doing math in my head, but as I said it,
I did that math in my head and I was like, geez, that's a
no, I wouldn't do that.
Aaron Rodgers does not allow, he starts canning plays after the 12th.
You're talking more like 12 to 15 for Aaron Jones and like 6 or 7 for AJ Dillon.
More than likely. And then if they get ahead, then it'll be a lot more. Then it could be up to 30. But I just, again, you know, I think Aaron Jones can't be overlooked.
I'm going to predict that Aaron Rodgers chucks it around the yard this week and that there's not much running game.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't think this is a game where you want to get your running backs beat up. I just, you should obliterate this Bears team. And if they don't, then, you know, but I don't know. There's five games left. Mm-hmm. Winning the war of attrition to me means chucking the ball around the yard.
You're allowed your opinion, even if you're wrong.
You'll remind me of it. I know you will.
He will absolutely remind us this on Sunday. Guys, we are sneaking up on a long episode here. So I'm going to wrap us up. I'm going to give you each 60 seconds for your final thoughts. This can be about the Packers, the Bears, your favorite Christmas movie as we get into December deeper here, what you want to have for supper. I don't know. Don't do that last one. That's dumb. But I'll give you each 60 seconds for your final thoughts. Ryan, go.
I would invite everyone to go and check out, you know, what I'm curious about the final five games, and Cassidy and Spoon know this about me. There's been no fonder play this season for me than a Corey Bohorquez punt, a Packers punt, because great punting is fun to watch. It's so rare, but it's fun to watch. And I wrote about it this week. And Corey Bohorquez is having by far the greatest punting season in Packers history. It's not close. He's on pace to set net and gross yardage records by more than 2 yards, fourth in net, eighth in gross. First time since 1987 that a Packers punter has been top 10 in both. No Packers punter has ever finished top five in net ever in a season, but it's December now and there's three home games left. And in December, starting Sunday, it's tough to punt in this place. I think it's going to be fascinating. Corey Bohorquez has done it before. He led the league in gross punting last year at Buffalo, of all places. So if you can do it in Buffalo, you should be able to do it in Green Bay. I think it's going to be fascinating to see the final three games. When the Packers offense comes off the field, that's when I'm going to be my most curious. What can Corey Bohorquez do to close out this magical historic season that he's on?
Well, Spoon, he went with punting. Do you want to talk about the percentage of touchbacks on kickoffs? What's your final thoughts?
My final thought is on holiday shopping.
Oh, God. Buckle in. This is about to be
good. I absolutely can't stand it. I think it's the worst exercise in history. And darn it, why do I have to be a part of that? Do I really have to do that? It's no secret that I'm not of the Christian persuasion. I don't think anybody knows that. But yes, I do partake, because it's festive for
grudgingly
my family. And I just, man, that is just a hard thing for me to do, a shop. And I always wait till the last minute. And, you know, then Amazon is like, you know, it's not, we can't guarantee it's going to get here in time. And I'm just like, now I got to go to the mall, you know? So I'm trying to work ahead, and maybe I should have spent the bye week doing that. I'm already a little bit behind, but that's my rant for today. And if you are disgusted by anything I said, please feel free to email me.
I'm giving you a Christmas card this year, Spoon. Yeah. It's going to happen. I'm going to hand deliver it. It's going to be handwritten. Because I thought about you on the bye week.
Spoon's complaining about having to go buy socks on Christmas Eve, apparently, for last second gifts. And I spent last night hand painting wrapping paper.
What?
I don't know.
Hand painting what?
I hand painted the wrapping paper for all the gifts that I wrapped. Because it was beautiful and heartfelt. And that's what Christmas is about. I've never
heard of that before, ever. Have you heard? You're anti-Christmas. No, you've never heard of that. Do you know what wrapping paper is?
I usually wrap it in the Journal Sentinel. So
I like it. That's what you
all
can
my get purpose.
For Christmas, Spoon, is Journal Sentinel subscriptions.
Right. That's a good idea. Oh, wait, we already have one.
Not a bad idea. Let's see. What is my final thought going to be? The best Christmas movie of all time is A Christmas Story. It shows Christmas as it should be. And you could not convince, you can't type. Let me start this sentence over. The only way you're getting me to watch It's a Wonderful Life is if you tie me up and put a knife to my throat.
Biting words. I do it every Christmas Eve. Nope. When George Bailey screams Merry Christmas and runs down that snowy street, it makes my heart a flutter. I'm just going to say it does.
Well, I've been, I can't spend the first hour and a half so depressed to get up for that moment. I hate that movie. I hate it. Anyways, that is all we have for you tonight on this episode of the Green 19 podcast. We will be back after the Packers take on the Bears on Sunday Night Football, primetime showdown. In the meantime, stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage as the Packers head into their final stretch of the regular season. This has been the Green 19 podcast, brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.